United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Good day. Welcome to the Seminary Explorers. My name is Nelson Strobert, and today my guest is Pastor Richard Michael, who is the interim pastor at Big Spring United Lutheran Church here in Pennsylvania. Welcome to the Seminary Explorers.
Thank you.
One of the reasons that I wanted to have this discussion is because you have just recently returned from the Holy Land.
Yes.
And that sounds intriguing to me, and I know we've had, at the seminaries, we've had pastors and professors go on these trips with their students, but you're a pastor, and I want to know what motivated you to do this past trip, and from what I know, that you've done these trips before.
I have. I guess, first of all, I need to say that I really thought this was not a good idea to go to the Holy Land, as some of us put it, on the back of our parishioners, because as you plan these trips, you plan them so that your trip is covered by the cost of the
participants,
fare that other people are paying, the participants
right.
are paying. And so I always felt that this was inappropriate. And then a colleague of mine, namely Richard Guybe Sr., decided that I needed to see this from a different perspective, and that perspective included one of the trips that he had available to go to the Holy Land. So he insisted, without too much arm twisting, but he insisted that I go. And I think that was about 1986. And the trip was incredible. Not only did I see places and hear stories that had been part of my life since I began in Sunday school.
Right.
But the strange part of the trip was, and I'm not the only person who has said this in these journeys, is that in those days you would get off your flight, and that was an El Al flight, and you'd walk down the steps to the tarmac before you went into the airport in Tel Aviv and customs and passport control. And for some reason or other, I got out of the, came out of the plane, walked down the steps, and again, I'm not the only person who has said this, but I felt like I was home. There was this strange feeling of being home. I don't think this is about reincarnation. I don't think this is about having had other lives. I just think that there is an environment that you enter when you come to Israel and Palestine that that you have been part of, and it is a kind of homecoming in a very, very interesting way, and has been ever since I've gone on many trips to Israel.
Right, and as you say, in some ways, you're familiar. Because, you know, the times in Sunday school and studying scripture, these names are part of your life and who you are.
Yes, and they're part of the story of your faith.
Right, but that initial trip must have made an impression because you've made several trips after that.
I think this morning I got my passports out and I counted 11 trips.
Okay.
Since that 1986 trip. Some of that had to do with a hiatus in my being on the roster for 3 years. I was on leave.
On leave from call from the parish.
Right, and I was actually working for a travel company called MTS, an offshoot of the Mennonite Central Committee years ago. And so I was selling Holy Land travel. Now, some of that had to do with business trips in that period of time. But most of those 11 are trips that I've taken people to Palestine, Israel, and many of them I have taken with other pastors. Names you would recognize, but we won't go into that.
Okay. May I ask, you choose certain sites to go to, or have you gone to the same sites each time?
Well, because you always have first-timers with you, people who've never been there before, there are sites that you need to take people to. For example, Jerusalem. I mean, people need to, the Galilee, Capernaum, Caesarea Philippi, Caesarea Maritima. These sites are such a part of the Jesus story that to not have shared them with people would just be cheating them on the trip, or not giving them the full experience. Also, Capernaum is one of those places that you can be fairly certain. For some people, it's important to walk where Jesus walked.
Okay.
And I don't wish to take that away from people, but that's a difficult thing to promise, in that most of these sites are traditional sites that have been marked by pilgrims and their prayers, and so have an authenticity that I trust, but would be questionable if you want to say, well, I want to put my feet where Jesus put his feet. But Capernaum is one of those places that the synagogue from the first century, the actual floor is there,
mm-hmm.
and we know Jesus taught and debated in that synagogue, and so that's one site. Others, there's the new site that's not terribly new anymore, actually underwritten by Corona Beer, which I would I would encourage if you're a beer drinker, because it supports the site called Magdala. Magdala is not far from Capernaum, and it's likely that Jesus taught and preached in that synagogue as well. All of these are on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. So the northern part of the country is something you definitely want to cover with people. Nazareth is another place you want to cover, the Church of the Annunciation, the Church of St. Joseph, Mary's Well. Cana is a site that for the last two trips, it was terribly significant because, especially this last one I took, I had two couples celebrating anniversaries.
Oh, okay.
On the days that we were in Cana, within a day. One was on the day, the other was within a day. And so we did a renewal of vows at Cana, which was, I think, just delightful.
Okay.
And then, of course, Jerusalem. And then there's historical sites like Megiddo, the supposed future site of Armageddon. but the source of Michener's book, The Source, the water tunnel, in that book. There's the Roman cities, Sepphoris and other, I mean, the sites, but you want to make sure your first timers get the Jesus sites as cleanly and as much time as they can.
Well, which leads me to my next question, that is, for you, going to your first time and you felt like it was going home, what is the reaction of the participants, when particularly the first-timers, when they finally get to those sites or those places?
This group was only 12. I only had 12 people this time. So I was able to watch those reactions, and all of them, except for my wife, were on their first trip.
Oh, okay.
How would I describe their reaction? There was a sense of awe, I think, that was part of their reaction. Sitting on the Mount of Beatitudes, reading Matthew 5, the experience at the pools of Bethsaida, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the crowds were so huge. This was the week after Orthodox Easter, and
oh, okay.
We had cop Coptic Christians, which was another side of the experience mm-hmm. that very few American Protestants in particular ever get to experience, that many Orthodox folks. But we never got into the tomb, but we were in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. We got up to Golgotha. They got to put their hands down through the access to touch the traditional spot of Jesus' crucifixion. We walked the Via Dolorosa. We read the texts that are traditional with that. It is a profound experience of the faith, I think, for them. At least that was my experience.
Okay. You go to, each day you're going to various sites. Are there other things that you did as a pastor leading this group that would be different from a secular agency doing the group?
I've never done it with a secular agency. I've done it with three different agencies, Educational Opportunities, MTS, and Near Eastern Tours, and now Good Shepherd Tours, Good Shepherd Travel and Grace Tours.
I guess the question is, did you do any preaching while you were there?
Yes. Because of the schedule, I had a pretty aggressive itinerary, but I had planned into it. I had planned into it daily Eucharist. We were unable to do that. We had Eucharist, I think, four times throughout the itinerary. We were not able to do it every day because of time. To get from one site to the other, and the size of the crowds of pilgrims that were there, you have to be flexible. But we did Eucharist at Cana, we did Eucharist at the Church of Dominant Flevit. And there again, most of these are Roman Catholic sites. Most of them are looked after by the Franciscans, who are celebrating 800 years of looking after them.
Okay.
And so when Roman Catholics want to use a chapel for a Eucharist, if it's small, it's closed to everybody else until Mass is over.
Oh, okay.
And so we actually miss going into a couple of churches because we didn't have time to wait for the Mass to end.
Okay. Which leads me to my next question. Going through all these sites, having the various activities, how do you prepare the group for a trip like this? Is there an orientation? If so, could you describe what that orientation is?
Well, it was different this time because my group came from Colorado, from Georgia, from Florida, and from Pennsylvania. So ordinarily you've got a geographical area like Ephrata or one of those local places that most of the people are coming from or can get to.
Right.
So you can, if you want, do some preparatory study on the itinerary, getting people ready to go, which I've done. You at the very minimum have to do some orientation on travel, especially if people have not traveled internationally. You have to get them ready to be good travelers.
Right.
Because traveling internationally, as you know, can become very frustrating if you're not flexible and just ready to go with the flow.
Exactly.
Right down to the items, when I went January a year ago, I think Dr. Zimmern had 5 or 6 pages of instructions for us. with he and Angela having lived there, I mean, they know the territory better than most. But I prepared a list of instructions. The travel company prepared a list of instructions. I borrowed from both Dr. Mm-hmm. Zimmern's and the travel companies. But most of all, this time, I created an itinerary that had with it the prayer offices, responsive prayer 1 and 2, the daily order for Eucharist, affirmation of vows. And with each site, I listed all the biblical references, if there were biblical references, that they could be reading about them before we got there. So it was a matter of trying to provide as much foundation for the itinerary we were about to share as I could.
Okay.
It worked out pretty well, actually, this time.
Good, good.
I've generally been the chaplain on these trips and generally done the devotions that you're able to do. The first couple of times I had in my mind that we were going to do these devotions, and time just precluded so many of them. This time our guide, who is a Palestinian Christian, this is the second time that I've had a Palestinian Christian as a guide, he was well prepared in order to use biblical text in order to ground people at the sites.
I
just filled in and was glad to do that because it was kind of fun to hear his
interpretation,
his reading, his exegetical interpretation, and what the guides bring to it. Every guide brings different gifts to the trip. So,
well, in your role as pastor, how have these trips contributed to your preaching and teaching?
I would tell you personally that once you've done this, taken this trip, I don't think you ever can read the Bible, listen to Bible stories, prepare a sermon without the images that this trip brings to it, which is like the color commentator at a sporting event. You know, you have all of this now as part of your reference library and part of your database. I've had parishioners tell me who have gone with me that, wow, you know, I was sitting there this morning listening to the sermon, and all I could think of was our trip and how important this place was to Jesus' ministry and the story it now brings to us and ours. It provides color and depth in ways that without doing it, it would be impossible. Be like studying the Battle of Gettysburg without ever going to Gettysburg.
Right, right.
Whole different story once you've been here and seen the battlefield.
Oh, okay. So. Now, from what you've said, there's a lot of preparation that goes into leading a trip like this. And how much time in advance, you know, do you start thinking about planning a trip and then doing all the other administrative things?
Because I've done it pretty often, it takes less time now. But the funny thing is, remember I said when Pastor Guybe Sr. first tried to get me to go, I was absolutely convinced this was not an ethical thing to do.
Right.
That I should have questioned Pastor Guybe's ethics. I should be kicked in the tuchus. But obviously he was on to something here that happened, and I've caught the spirit of it, I hope. But he promised me that if I did this, I would earn every penny of the trip that I would get from the participants going with me. And I have discovered he was completely right. The trip itself takes a year, and that's not so much for you as it is for people to collect the funds in order
to
go.
Right.
Because you're talking about a trip here that's likely going to be somewhere near $4,000 a person.
Right.
That includes airfare, two meals a day, guide, bus. The only thing that doesn't include is tips, and that's questionable. You can work that out. But we and Dick, and now as I've done this myself, this has been a you're going to put weeks of preparation into this if you do it well. First of all, you're going to have to know the site. Second of all, you don't have to know them as well as the guide does, because that's why you have a guide. But the biblical background, you've already probably got a lot of that. But you want to be able to supplement, answer questions, know where to go to get an answer if you need it. If you do have the opportunity to preach at a site and you want to make use of it, you probably ought to have given some thought to how that story may be impacting the trip. The whole other side to this is the political side.
Share some of that, please.
Yeah, we have the last two trips we stayed in Bethlehem, which is the Palestinian Authority. It brought a very different color to the trip.
Say some more about that.
Well, you're staying within the Palestinian Authority. The Palestinian Authority, as one person put it on this last trip, a Palestinian put it, the Palestinian Authority is just a large prison. In fact, the days we left, it was the Independence Day for Israel, and they closed the security checkpoint at Bethlehem for 3 days. Nobody could go to work. Nobody could come in. It was closed for 3 days. The sad part about this wall that's been built throughout the Holy Land, throughout Israel and Palestine, is that it's worked. It's cut terrorism to a minimum, and it's made people believe that walls are, as we experience here, walls are the answer. I don't think so. But this wall is cut people off from lands that they've farmed for hundreds of years in some cases. It is a political situation that I foresee no resolution to, but then hopefully with our prayers we can be surprised. Palestinians still, I have pictures of, in the center of a couple Palestinian villages, there's a huge key. This key is a symbol of Palestine, because when they left the West Bank in 1948, they locked their doors, and that key to that door has been passed down through the generations with the hope of return. However, return is unlikely, because those homes are now part of Israel.
Right, right.
And Israel is building settlements. If you look out across the desert, you'll see settlements on all the high ground, which is militarily...
To their advantage.
Their advantage. So it's the Palestinians are, and especially Christian Palestinians, a continually shrinking population. There's very few Christian villages left. Bethlehem is not a Christian village. There's Christians in Bethlehem,
right?
Some of them Lutherans. I just read an article on Taibe, which is a Israeli beer, that is one of the last majority Christian villages that's left Palestinian Authority again.
And I would think that participants in these trips, they have a different view, they have a different view when they're listening to the news the United States after their return.
I hope so. I noticed this time. I know I had some participants in the trip this time who, when they went, were pretty much Christian Zionist.
Okay.
I know that when they came home, they at the very least were questioning that position. I think Israel, I appreciate the reasons the state of Israel was created. I appreciate the fact that the Arab world resisted that. But they're now, we're well beyond those years, and it's time for us to find a way for these peoples to live together.
Right.
And I know that's changing. I mean, what you have in Israel and Palestine is you have the three major religions, or three of the major religions, all Abraham, based in Abraham. And it is fascinating to watch people learn about those as they experience the differences just walking through the marketplace in Jerusalem.
Well, I can't believe our time is up.
Wow.
But I want to thank you for sharing with us your work in bringing people across to the Holy Land and your reactions to the political situation that takes place there. So I hope that you'll make another trip.
Well, I thought this was my last, but I may try for one more. I don't know if I'll stop until I have to.
Okay.
Thank you, Nelson.
Right. My guest today has been Pastor Richard Michael, interim pastor at Big Spring United Lutheran Church here in Pennsylvania. For the Seminary Explorers, this is Nelson Strobert. Have a good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explorers, a production of United Lutheran Seminary with campuses in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.